Major funding for NJ Spotlight News is provided in part by NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association, and by the PSCG Foundation.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, battle lines over the county line continue to be drawn. Gubernatorial candidate Steve Fulop throwing his support behind the court's initial decision to abolish the line.
I'm comfortable that ultimately what will prevail is a fair election for both sides.
Plus, as Muslims here in New Jersey gather to celebrate the end of Ramadan and mourn the thousands of lives lost in Gaza.
Please protect our mothers and our fathers and our children and our elders and our brothers and sisters in Gaza.
Some groups are taking their calls for a ceasefire to the ballot box.
So what we are trying to do now is to keep the pressure on to bring the policy and actions in line with the rhetoric. I'm going to be urging people to vote uncommitted as a protest vote.
And expanding access. Newark's new partnership looks to bring high-speed internet for more than 1,600 residents in the city's public housing complexes.
This is a game changer, one, because when we were at the height of COVID, you know, our children were stuck in a house. Many of them had no access to broadband and internet.
NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening and thanks for joining us this Tuesday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. The party line battle that dominated the U.S. Senate primary may be shifting to the next governor's race. This week, Jersey City Mayor and gubernatorial hopeful Steve Fulop threw his campaign support behind a federal judge's recent decision to abolish use of the county line ballot system in the upcoming Democratic U.S. Senate primary. Fulop's campaign filed an amicus brief pushing back on arguments made by the Middlesex County Democratic Organization, one of just two Democratic County committees who are appealing the judge's ruling, which temporarily halts the use of the line just for the Democratic race. Fulop has long opposed bracketing party-endorsed candidates together on ballots. In making the announcement, he took to the social media platform X, writing, "We want to see fair elections in New Jersey this year and every year into the future." Mayor Fulop joins me now. Mr. Mayor, thanks so much for joining me. What are the arguments you're laying out in this brief?
Well, I mean, the arguments are fundamentally what some have others argued with regards to we're the only state that does this sort of lines. And then beyond that, you know, it's a response to the Middlesex brief, which is the only political organization that responded similar to what we're doing. And basically, they outlined a lot of reasons why they think the line should exist. And we're pushing back, saying a lot of their arguments just aren't truthful. And so
what's that's false about them?
Well, look, first they start by saying that it promotes democracy. And you just look at their delegation in and of itself, the state Senate delegation, which they have the largest in New Jersey. They have one of the most diverse counties, yet 100% of their state senators are white. 80% of them are white males. Doesn't speak to diversity, promoting any sort of other opportunities for people. You look at the history of block voting. It's something that's familiar in Middlesex and around New Jersey. They say it isn't, but factually it is. So, you know, we outline all those things for the court, and hopefully they continue down the path of saying that New Jersey should be like the rest of the country with block voting.
You, though, also were drawing on personal experience from past races in here that you highlighted. What specifically did you experience that you feel is relevant here?
Yeah, so in 2013, I ran for mayor against the entire political structure. It was one of the two races in the country that President Obama actually endorsed. He endorsed my opponent. The entire state apparatus was against me, but because it was block voting, where nobody had the advantage of a line, ideas is what was relevant to the voters, and I ultimately was successful. In 2017, when I looked at running for governor for the first time, and I quickly realized that the lines were not going to be supportive of me, I chose not to follow through in running because there was no path to winning. And if you look at the day after and the week after I decided not to run, and everybody surrounded Phil Murphy publicly, the public narrative was that there is no longer a need for a primary, that Phil Murphy will be the governor. And that just speaks to the importance of the lines, which definitely doesn't promote democracy.
The Middlesex County brief, though, notes that other federal appellate courts have supported keeping systems like this in place. So, and they obviously hired a powerhouse attorney to represent them. Why do you think it's in their interest to keep this bluntly?
Look, I think a lot of people who control the lines throughout New Jersey make a lot of money off controlling the lines, whether they're lobbyists, whether they're special interests.
Public contracts.
Public contracts. And the lines, particularly down ballot at the county level, municipal level, and assembly level, where there's less scrutiny and you could control people, you'll have elected officials are beholden to the political boss that controls the line as opposed to beholden to the voter. And that's the fundamental problem here. So if you're looking for more accountability to the voter, you should be in support of block ballots.
Are you filing this now to, for lack of a better word, get it out of the way before the gubernatorial election starts in earnest?
Well, my hope is that we operate like the rest of the country. 49 other states do block ballots. And look, I don't want to deal with this next year. So I want to make sure that we have a fair, open election next year. There's no lines, block ballots, and this is the opportunity to insert ourselves.
For both parties, because as of right now, at least for this primary, and we need to see where it goes beyond that, it's really only affecting Democrats.
Yeah, because Democrats filed, but I think a reasonable person would say that if it's unconstitutional for Democrats, it's also unconstitutional for Republicans. So I'm comfortable that ultimately what will prevail is a fair election for both sides.
Mayor Steve Phillip, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, the removal of the county line is giving a progressive movement in the state a real shot. Far-left Democrats are planning to vote uncommitted on the ballot for the Democratic presidential primary, a warning signal of sorts for President Biden, urging his administration to take a stronger stance on the war in Gaza. The protest vote has been used successfully across the country in places like Michigan and Missouri. As senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan reports, New Jersey appears to be next.
We're desperate. We're desperate to be heard.
Carissa Cunningham says New Jersey Democratic Socialists pushing to end the violence in Gaza followed the example of states like Michigan, where 100,000 Democrats voted uncommitted as a protest vote against incumbent President Joe Biden's handling of the Israel-Hamas war. In Jersey, they worked hard to get the issue on June's Democratic primary ballot under the slogan, Justice for Palestine, Permanent Ceasefire Now.
Elected officials have really been ignoring everyday working people who care about this issue. And so the only message that we feel that they will respond to is our votes. And we also want to be able to send our delegates, send our voices to the Democratic National Convention to push Biden even more directly.
I'm going to be urging people to vote uncommitted as a protest vote.
U.S. Senate candidate Larry Hamm believes ongoing protests demanding President Biden call for a ceasefire have begun to move the political needle. The U.N. Security Council finally approved a ceasefire resolution after the U.S. abstained. If Israel invades Rafah, the administration now warns it'll impose conditions on military aid. Hamm sees this uncommitted primary vote for a ceasefire as a lever.
So what we are trying to do now is to keep the pressure on to bring the policy and actions in line with the rhetoric.
Given New Jersey's large population of Muslim Americans, it would not be a surprise to see some votes for this slate here in New Jersey.
Writers Micah Rasmussen notes after a federal judge abolished Jersey's county line and ordered block ballots for the Democratic primary, it gave the Justice for Palestine movement a real shot.
This is the first primary in which there is no line and therefore no visual cue to the organization-backed candidates for those delegate positions. This is now going to be, you'll have a slogan that says New Jersey Democrats, and you'll have a slogan that says Justice for Palestine, and it'll be up to voters to sort out which delegates they're voting for.
Democratic Socialists got 126 National Convention delegates, and they're on most of the ballots in New Jersey. But they've ended up at the bottom of the presidential block, the bottom left corner on Bergen County's newly designed block ballot. The group launched a protest on X demanding county clerks redraw the ballot.
What they're doing is they're marginalizing us by keeping us in this small print, in this small box.
I'm getting letters from this group. I'm not going to redraw the ballot. The ballot is in process to meet the state deadlines to make sure the vote-by-mail ballots get out on time.
Bergen County Clerk John Hogan says most clerks opted for this design, putting the Justice for Palestine group last because while they do have delegates, they don't have an actual candidate. It's primarily a protest vote. Delegate font sizes are all the same. He's scrambling to educate voters about the new ballots and says this has not been easy.
Hurricane Sandy, I thought, was going to be my toughest challenge to the election. This one definitely beats it. I'm not satisfied by the direction that we're getting from the state. Clerks are on their own, and it's very, very difficult to abide by deadlines when there's complete unknown of what's happening next in the court case.
There's no rules for this. It is Wild West because we're just making this. If we're talking about ballots in June, we are literally making up as we go along here in New Jersey.
FDU's Dan Cassino says it's unlikely county clerks would redraw ballots at this point. The deadline to send out vote-by-mail ballots is April 20th. I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
The intense pushback over the Biden administration's support for Israel comes as Muslims and Arab Americans begin Eid celebrations, signifying the end of Ramadan. But the typically joyous celebration is being overshadowed by the ongoing violence in Gaza, where more than 32,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli airstrikes. Muslims in New Jersey are instead marking the holiday by mourning those lives and standing in solidarity with Palestinians across the globe. Senior correspondent Joanna Gagas has their story.
There is no Eid while Gaza has no Eid.
Eid is a holiday of celebration that marks the end of Ramadan, a month of fasting from dawn to sunset. But as Eid is about to begin this year, Palestinians in Patterson don't feel the joy they usually feel.
Eid is a time of unity, a time of compassion and gratitude. It is a moment when we come together as a community, breaking our fast and sharing meals with loved ones. But this year, we must pause and reflect. We must acknowledge the pain and injustice faced by our brothers and sisters in Gaza. How are we supposed to come together as families and enjoy our meals when we know that 2 million Gazas are being starved by the Israeli Zionist regime?
Dozens of Palestinians and supporters gathered in Little Palestine in Patterson last night to share their grief and pain as they watched the continued devastation of Gaza. They shared stories of those killed since the start of the war with Israel, including doctors, professors, aid workers, and innocent families and children.
Sama was a daughter of UNRWA photographer Hussein Jaber. He recalls attempting to flee to Gaza City on December 5th with his family when his sweet 4-year-old daughter, Selma, was shot in the neck by Israeli soldiers. She somehow kept running at the moment, but died from her wounds moments later.
Hussein Rami El-Bassous is a 10-year-old who was loved by everyone. Her teacher shared that she was the class's favorite. She was always happy and had a loving personality. Hussein and her family fled home to a safe spot when the area they were in was heavily bombed by the IOF, and Bissan was killed instantly on November 30th, 2023.
Some shared personal stories of grief over loved ones still suffering in Gaza.
My father, like the millions of Gaza, does not know if he's going to make it. And this has been one of the most difficult Ramadans of my life, knowing that what's going on in Gaza and having our father over there. They are being targeted or starved to death. They don't have food to break their iftar. To know my father is starving and we have food on our table is an unbearable thought.
On September 18, 23, I gave birth to two beautiful twin girls, Miriam and Mayar. My husband was forced to miss out on the birth of his daughters, the firstborn child. My husband still has not been able to meet his daughters. and I do not know if he ever will.
Black Lives Matter leaders in Patterson committed their support of the Palestinians in their cries for a permanent ceasefire.
We want a liberated and free Palestine. Every human deserves safety. Every human deserves justice.
Those who gathered were given t-shirts to wear on Eid in a show of solidarity.
Typically you buy new clothes, you're festive, you get together with family, and we want to send out a message that this Eid is going to be different. It's not like any other Eid with the ongoing genocide that's happening in Palestine.
Attendees also painted rocks with special messages of support that were turned into this rock memorial at the end of the night. And they joined together in prayer.
Ya Rabbul Alameen, please protect our mothers and our fathers and our children and our elders and our brothers and sisters in Gaza.
Many who gathered here recorded messages of hope and support for their brothers and sisters in Gaza. Those messages will reach them on Eid. In Patterson, I'm Joanna Gagas, NJ Spotlight News.
We have more details tonight on the state takeover of the Warren County Prosecutor's Office. After a lengthy probe, the Attorney General's office is alleging top staff there lied about caseloads to inflate the budget with grant money meant for insurance fraud investigations. In a 22-page report released last night, the Attorney General's office outlined an inquiry that began in 2022 after whistleblowers claimed the prosecutor's office was misusing the money and fudging timesheets to cover their tracks. The report also accuses the office of impeding the investigation and potentially retaliating against and intimidating witnesses. The report cites several secret recordings of a staffer who handled insurance fraud cases for the prosecutor's office, with multiple witness accounts stating there was actually little to no work being done. On Friday, Attorney General Matt Platkin abruptly removed the top prosecutor, James Pfeiffer, and replaced him with a deputy from the State Office of Public Integrity and Accountability. Pfeiffer has reportedly called the report inaccurate. Well, the State Forest Fire Service isn't taking any chances after last year's especially active season. The department's officials are preparing for even more intense fires and a longer wildfire season, which typically runs from mid-March through May. That's when the temperatures go up, humidity goes down, and winds get stronger. To help, the state is doubling down on an age-old tactic in preventing wildfires, you. Melissa Rose Cooper reports.
Residents and visitors should not become complacent just because of the amount of rain we've had here in March and April. You know, it only takes a day or two with the wind blowing and warmer temperatures like you have today. And no matter how wet it was yesterday, by today we could be having fires.
A strong message from State Forest Fire Warden and Chief of the Forest Fire Service, Bill Donnelly, as New Jersey is in the midst of its peak wildfire season.
New Jersey's spring fire season typically runs from mid-March through mid-May. During this time of year, trees, underbrush have not yet leafed up, and relative humidity is typically low. Windy days are very common. And the combination of these factors means forest lands dry out quickly, and when they dry out quickly, We have fires.
The State Department of Environmental Protection Forest Fire Service hosting this webinar, providing the public with the tools and resources they need to mitigate the risk of wildfire, which officials say is higher due to climate change.
We increasingly see dry conditions between heavy rainfalls and what we have come to know as flash droughts. Last year, the research nonprofit Climate Central conducted a nationwide analysis of weather conditions during the past 50 years and found that the annual number of fire weather days has risen by 10 days in northern New Jersey and 4 days in southern New Jersey.
John Cecil, Assistant Commissioner for State Parks, Forests, and Historic Sites, says those findings mirror the DEP's own climate change scientific report, stating longer wildfire seasons as well as an increase in larger fires. Last year, nearly 1,200 wildfires burned roughly 18,000 acres across the state, making it the most active fire year in New Jersey in more than a decade. 14 of them were considered major, burning more than 100 acres.
Through last year's state budget, the Murphy administration responded to the busy fire year and these challenging conditions that we've been facing by supporting the Forest Fire Service with a $3 million budget boost to enhance protection of lives and property through investments in new equipment and staff.
One of the ways the Forest Fire Service is working to mitigate wildfire is with its network of 21 fire towers and observers.
And what their job is they take weather readings, they maintain the weather that's outside, and they look for smoke. And once they see smoke, they will triangulate it and pinpoint the location of the fire, and we will send resources right away. Depending on the fire, we'll dispatch aircraft, fire trucks, bulldozers, water tenders. Typically, the fire towers see these smokes before anybody actually reports them. So having the towers up would be very beneficial as far as early detection and quick responses made by our folks out in the field.
Our equipment that we use, our brush trucks, they're constructed in-house and they're very specialized, particularly in the southern part of the state. They're designed to go off-road, push down trees, push down brush, get to a fire, even if it's in a remote location, suppress that fire quickly.
Forest officials say they're successful in keeping about 75% or more of all fires under 5 acres, but they want residents and visitors to know the importance of everyone working together. That includes avoiding leaving smoking materials like cigarettes and matches on the ground, keeping lighters away from children, and never leaving fires unattended. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Melissa Rose Cooper.
In our Spotlight on Business report, seeing access to the internet as a basic necessity, not a luxury. Newark Mayor Raz Baraka recently announced high-speed internet service has been installed in 12 Newark Housing Authority buildings, giving some 1,600 families living in public housing access to the connectivity, which is often pointed to as a barrier preventing low-income households from getting ahead in school or securing higher-paying work. Raven Santana has the story.
While some may take for granted that they have access to high-speed internet service, nearly one in five Newark households still do not have an internet subscription at home. And Newark Mayor Raz Baraka says that's a result of residents not being able to afford it.
The reality is if you can't afford the internet in your city, then you might as well not have it anyway, because it's close to you, you just can't touch it, right? You can't use it because it's not cost effective for your family to pay the rent, to put food on the table and pay $180 or $80 or $200 for the internet.
Today, that reality has changed after the city announced that high-speed internet service has been installed into at least 12 Newark Housing Authority buildings as part of the city's new partnership between Newark Fiber and telecom provider Andrina.
We did it in the places we thought was needed. We did it in our rec centers around COVID, so kids could be able to distance learn. They could come there and learn. We did it in our parks. And then we did the housing authority buildings. And then from there, we'll be able to move on to the rest of the city.
Andrina offers residential users access to high-speed internet service for just $20 a month per month, saving families nearly $700 a year.
We've studied this citywide is about $75 a month for your home internet package. And so this really is a tremendous savings. And we started it with the partnership with the Newark Housing Authority.
We had to go out and find people actually do the work. So we solicited bids. We went with a group called Andrina, who's doing a fantastic job. We have local people helping us get people trained as well.
South Ward Councilman Patrick Council says the new affordable access to Wi-Fi has eliminated barriers for both the younger and older generations.
So this is a game changer, one, because when we were at the height of COVID, you know, our children were stuck in a house. Many of them had no access to broadband and internet. We noticed that the digital divide was not just hurting our young people, but it was hurting our seniors. They didn't have access to telehealth. They didn't have access to family members to have conversation and to be able to reach out to people who loved them and cared about them.
Aaron Meyerson of Invest Newark says despite the internet service being available for all 1,600 users, since launch, only about 150 households have signed up. Meyerson now hopes that changes with today's announcement, promotion on social media, and word of mouth. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Raven Santana.
It looks like demand for electric vehicles in New Jersey is finally taking off. According to new data from the Department of Environmental Protection, registrations for plug-in electric vehicles surged in 2023, growing roughly 66%. The report points to more than 154,000 new registrations in the last year. Compare that to just over 91,000 electric vehicles registered at the close of 2022. That's a record-setting number, according to the nonprofit Charge EVC, which now estimates New Jersey is within reach of the Murphy administration's goal to have 330,000 electric vehicles on the road by the end of next year. But the group also argues reaching that target will take more work, calling out Governor Murphy for signing legislation last week, putting an annual registration fee on for electric cars that are bought starting this July. Doug O'Malley is president of Charge EVC New Jersey and says the ball is now in the policymakers' court.
We can hit this goal if we continue with the policies that got us here in the first place. So we have seen expansive growth because New Jersey has some of the strongest incentives in the nation for electric vehicles. What we've seen in the last few months has been a step backward. We shouldn't have an EV tax of more than $1,000 for the right to drive an electric vehicle. And then the sales tax exemption has been critical in making the numbers add up, especially for people that are buying electric vehicles that are lower on the sales price.
Turning to Wall Street, stocks turned lower today while traders wait for a key inflation report to land. Here's how the markets closed. And that does it for us tonight. But don't forget to download the NJ Spotlight News podcast so you can listen anytime. I'm Brianna Venosi for the entire NJ Spotlight News team. Thanks for being with us. Have a great evening. We'll see you right back here tomorrow night.
New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child. RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together. And New Jersey Realtors, the voice of real estate in New Jersey. More information is online at njrealtor.com.